Big ol' Marcus.
Oh, dude.
Big ol' Marcus.
Right here, right here.
Welcome back to the Native Ways Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Ellis.
I'm your co-host, Christian Miller.
And today we're going to get into a little episode kind of relating to the current seasons going on. It's bow season. We've been seeing quite a few of y'all post-harvest on our Facebook, Instagram, stuff like that. If y'all want to keep doing that, we greatly appreciate it, and we want to share y'all's experiences with the communities. We've had a lot of engagement on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, all of that. Check us out on Spotify, same things, all the podcast platforms. But yeah, we want to see y'all's harvests. Anything that y'all are doing right now, y'all send it to us. We'll share it, feature y'all.
Yeah, so also shout out to Texas Cash Magazine. So we did get a feature that's going to be coming on October 15th. You can see us in that magazine if you go ahead and subscribe to their magazine. It's actually a pretty cool deal. Quite a few different artifacts and different, you know, hunting and fishing stuff that's in there as well. So it's pretty cool to see that. And also shout out to Dancing Dogs Ranch. Richard got a little bit of merch from them, some stickers, all that good stuff. So, you know, shout out to them. We appreciate your support. And I guess, Dylan, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, you have the floor.
Yeah, I'm Dylan Mormon. A little background. I've been hunting all the life, fishing here lately, say the last 9 years. Been running some blood dogs for Wounded Game Recovery. I do a few other hobbies, but that's why I'm here today to talk about finding moving game, kind of maybe give some tips and tricks, help some people out. You know, you see a lot of posts every year on Facebook, you know, all these hunting pages. Everybody, hey, who has a dog? Hey, who has this? Hey, I just shot this buck. What can I do? You know, just maybe help answer some questions. And, you know, fortunate to have you guys ask me to be here and talk to y'all.
Yeah,
get the word out, at least a few people.
Heck yeah, we appreciate you coming on. So, that being said, everybody that is following us kind of knows, like, you know, we're Central Texas based, we're in Killeen area. So, do you want to kind of tell people what your general range is with your dogs?
Well, that's kind of subjective, I guess. I live in Nolanville area, but I generally try to stay, how do I put it? I try to stay within 2 hours of Nolanville.
Okay.
I don't go too far south. I try to stay north of Austin. There's a couple guys down on the south side of Austin that, you know, they got some awesome dogs. So if I get calls down there, I'll send it that way. And then, you know, to the east and west, I don't go as far as, you know, like I'll go, if anybody that kind of knows this area, I try to stay, you know, 281. I try to stay on like the east side.
Okay.
So 281 over there in like Lampasas area.
Mm-hmm.
Try, you know, Burnett, Bertram, coming up, Lampasas, try to stay on the east side. But going north, I have a little more range. I can actually go the full 2 hours without, there's plenty of guys around that have good dogs that are reputable guys that, you know, some of the directions, it's kind of pointless for me to drive 2 hours when I can just tell them, hey, get a contact with so-and-so. He's the best guy for that area. You know, he's 30 minutes away versus 2 hours for me. If that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you just kind of have like a collaboration, I guess, so to speak, with different guys that run dogs. Like you have your own little community in a way, right?
Yeah, it's pretty close. I'm sure, you know, like with you guys that are digging for artifacts, which I've never done. Walked around, picked some up off the ground, but actually digging and stuff like that, I would be lost. Like how y'all know, like, all right, hey, let's dig here. y'all got me lost. But it's the same kind of thing, you know, like I know so-and-so's over here, or I know so-and-so's up north, or I know so-and-so's kind of east, or this guy's south, or this guy's over there close to that. You know, it's a pretty good community. Most of the guys, you know, I've been able to meet a lot of guys and learn a lot of stuff from some of these guys that's been doing it for a long time.
Yeah.
And just kind of build good rapport. And
so I guess where did you get like started I guess I could say that since we're talking about getting to know people and learning different ways of doing it, like what pursued you to do tracking dogs?
So I grew up always around dogs. Like, I had uncles that had beagles and, you know, to run rabbit dogs, and they had, you know, little crossbred mutt dogs they were running squirrels with. My dad and my uncle, they had labs, you know, for duck hunting, bird hunting, whatever. And my grandpa ran, I actually just learned this the other day, my grandpa back in the 60s or 70s started a beagle club, you know, a hunting dog club up in Ohio area, in the area he lives in. I didn't know he did that. I learned that recently. But I've always been around dogs. I've hunted anything from rabbits, squirrels, pigs, you know, used dogs for birds, used dogs for everything. And then coming to now, I started it because I had some pig dogs, got rid of them. Then I had a dog that had some puppies. And at the time, shortly, a little before this, when they were, you know, I already had the puppies, but they were about to be born, I had a deer that needed to be tracked for my daughter. It was like her first deer. And guy come out, we couldn't find anything, you know, like I found hair, and I watched the deer run into a tree. And I was like, well, deer don't just run into a tree that ain't dead,
right?
You know? And I'm talking like, not just like a small tree. It was like a full cedar, you know, from the ground up cedar bush, basically. And he ran right through the middle of it. And I was like, there ain't no way we can shoot into that deer. So all we found was some hair. And I called a guy that I knew. And he had a blood dog. But he didn't just track for everybody. He just, you know, his friends, family, whatever. And he come out with his dog and they found it. And I was like, man, you know, that was awesome. But those, nothing here but a handful of hair. Y'all went in here, you know, a couple hundred yards and found this. You know, that's awesome. You know, I was pretty. And then like I said, the pups were about to be born a couple months later. And I was like, I know what I'm doing. And what I, you know, you can't just make any dog a blood dog. I got lucky that my dogs, you know, they were bred to hunt, bred to, you know, work. And I got lucky that the two that I had that I started with took onto it really well and have done really well.
So you said
kind of kept going from there.
So you said that those were hog dogs originally. So does that mean there's some type of like Catahoula mix or?
Yeah. So I'm not gonna lie to you. I have no idea what he is. I know the mom was Blackmouth Cur.
Okay.
That was my dog. And then the male was a friend of mine that, you know, we ran pig dogs together here and there. And he was like Catahoula, Blackmouth, maybe some hound, maybe four. I don't know.
Just typical.
I have no idea.
Typical pig dog mix.
You know, just stuff that they had, the male anyways, was stuff that they had that worked and did well at their job. And they were like, all right, well, I guess you deserve to get some puppies out of you. And then they had the dogs and kept going. I don't know what was in the mail. I have no clue.
Okay.
But I do know that, you know, they just hunted. That's all. That's it. And they were originally bred to be hog dogs. I thought about starting to pig hunt again. So I had a litter of pups and was going to do that. And like I said, at the very end, you know, it was the youth season, the end of the year youth season at the end, you know, what is that, late mid-January? Is when my daughter shot that deer. I was like, man, these pups are going to be born in April. That's not far away. Like, this is going to be a venture here.
So,
and that's it, really. That's how it kind of started, was with that. And I was like, well, here we go. See what happens.
Okay. So seeing that you've done, you know, you've run blood dogs and you've run hog dogs, and considering they're from the same bloodline, I'm assuming there's, and just from what I know about pig hunting, I'm assuming there's some similarities in tracking blood and tracking pigs, like running dogs for pigs. Yeah.
Sort of.
Right? Yeah. I mean, the bay is different, but.
So like running running pig dogs or any dog, really, coon dog, squirrel, any of that stuff. I'm going to let you go, and you're going to run. You know, fortunately, we live in a state where you can do things off a leash. You don't have to have a dog on a leash. You know, you can use GPS collars and stuff like that. With pigs, squirrels, coons, all that, I'm letting you go, and I'm hoping you run into the woods or wherever you're going, and I'm hoping you find a pig. I don't care what pig it is in the woods. Just go find it.
Yeah.
Right? Hoping it's a big one. But if it's a small one, you know what? You did your job. But with the deer dogs, the difference is like, when I show up somewhere, I mean, I know this area, we have a huge population of deer in our area. I mean, I've had days where I've sat in a deer stand and had 20 plus deer around me. I'm sure you guys have had days like that, or had days where you hunt, you got 7 or 8 deer or whatever.
Yeah.
You shoot one. I'm trying to find that one. And it's all comes to scent. You know, you train for the scent. I mean, I started these puppies. They were big enough to walk, and I was, you know, giving them, you know, soaking their, you know, food driven, right?
Okay.
You gotta make, I'm a firm believer in you can get animals to do anything for food. You know, like at SeaWorld, they can train a whale to do a backflip with a fish.
Yeah.
So,
damn sardines.
If you can do that with some food, I think you can take something that we've domesticated over hundreds of years, entice with some food or some kind of prey, you know, drive. You can do it. I mean, not all dogs can do it, right? They got to have the stamina, they got the nose, they got to have the smartness, the grit, they got to have all kinds of stuff to them to do it. But I try to make everything I do food-driven and training.
So, okay. So, yeah, then that's tying in right where I wanted to go with this. So, your training, what does your training look like? So, kind of, when are you starting the dogs? What are you starting them? And I'm not telling you to, you know, tell everybody your secrets or whatever, if there is any secrets to it, but
I mean, there's not really many secrets. I mean, most people know if there was blood, right, you wouldn't need a dog, unless it's one of them ones somebody's tracking it, they're 700 yards deep, they're still finding blood, they're like, no way I'm going this far, and then they call, right? They're like, this is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you're looking for other scents. You know, if you're even with a hole in him, he's putting out some kind of scent. They have scent glands in their feet. You know, I'm sure everybody's seen it, you know, kind of between their feet, that little hole there.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's like, man, what is this for? Well, it's a scent gland, right?
Yeah.
So I could be wrong. I don't know exactly, but I could be wrong. From what I understand, that scent gland procures a scent. You know, just like me, you, Christian, we're all human. We all have a human scent, but our scent's going to be different.
Yeah.
Same thing with the deer. So with that gland, whenever they're shot or wounded or whatever, they put off a different scent.
Right.
So a lot of the training is going to involve that scent.
Mm-hmm.
So as puppies, you know, fortunate, you know, I got a couple buddies who run some processing shops or work at processing shops, go there, you know, hey man, can I get some feet? From, you know, try to be like bow season, right? You know, majority, even if you shoot a deer good during bow season, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're going to run. They may not run far, but they're going to run. So you want something that ran. And I mean, you could take the feet, they make all kinds of stuff. You could drag it, use these scent shoe things where you strap the foot to. You can use PVC pipe, whatever. And then a little bit of blood. I try to keep everything together from one deer, like blood from that deer, feet from that deer, like all the stuff together.
Yeah.
So you're not sending mixed signals. And that's like puppy stuff, right? Like I'm talking, couple months old type that, you know, you can do just things to get their nose activated. Like I've soaked their food in blood, threw it out in the yard, you know, made them walk around. You know, they're looking for their food because they're hungry, right? But also, you're kind of introducing that blood smell too, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Making them use their nose.
Yeah, enticing them.
They're not going to get their full meal by picking up piece by piece out of the yard, but you're just getting them to learn to use their nose, right?
Yeah. Okay.
But that's kind of puppy stuff right, and then once it hits, you know, like I said, the pups I started with, they were born in April, so by the time deer season comes around, you know, they're 5-6 months old. And then at that point, I just called friends, family, myself. You know, I was in the deer stand. I'd shoot a deer, even if the deer ran, you know, 15 feet and fell over, I'd just leave it there, walk back to the truck, go get him or and her, and here you go. Let's start right here where we shot. Let's go try and find it.
Yeah. So you're running two dogs?
You know, like, something easy, high success, high reward, right? Like, you know, if you're starting something new, you don't want to start out and fail every dang time. Then you're going to give up on it.
Yeah.
But if you go out and you start something new and you're winning and you're getting it right, and you're getting a win and you're winning and winning and winning and winning, you're building that confidence up, you know, and then you start. I did that for a full year. You know, friends, family, I was fortunate to have an MLD property where, I don't, I'm sure most people around this area know what MLD property is, right?
Yeah, I would imagine, but if you want to kind of explain it.
MLD is just, I don't know exactly how you go about getting it. I know you got to apply, and I think they're like, you can have a biologist come out and they survey the land, or you can send in like game camera pictures for X amount of time, and then, you know, the state looks at it and says, okay, you have X amount of property, this much available natural resources. So you have X amount of deer on the property to healthily have a deer population. You know, you need to get your numbers down to this. So then the state gives you tags.
Right.
And I was fortunate enough to have that and just kind of, you know, able to put my dogs in front of a lot of tracks that were a win.
Yes, sir.
And then that first year, like I said, I didn't take any calls. I wasn't even advertising. I didn't even, at the time, to be 100% honest, I didn't realize it was like a thing, you know, that it was like a, does that make sense? I don't know how to.
Like a thing for you is like a business or like?
Like a thing like that people like, needed. Yeah. Or,
a business. Yeah. Like there's a market for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't realize it. So I was like, I just thought I was doing it for myself, just something to do, you know, like for friends, family, buddies. And then the following year, I started the year, went all through, and it was probably, I was doing the same things, you know, just buddies shooting deer, me shooting deer. Like I said, even if it was something easy, I mean, there is a few hard ones in there. You know, I let my kids shoot. They were young at the time, so, you know, they get excited. Stuff happens, right?
Yes, sir.
So, you know, a couple hard, a couple easy, you know. And then I seen a thing on Facebook where a guy posted it, said, hey, I, you know, shot this deer this morning. It was a bad shot. It was archery deer. This is like my first one for the public, track for the public. And it was archery shot deer, and he said he knows the deer was hit back. You know, he didn't really rush the shot, but his deer moved. I don't remember the exact details, but hit the deer back. And I was like, okay, well, did you look at all? He was like, no, last shot, the deer ran 10 yards closer. He only shot him at 20 yards. The deer was standing at 10 yards and stood there. He said, I can see the hole. I know it's back. So then what happened? He said, the deer walked off. I sat in the stand for 45 minutes. And I went and got my truck and drove to the house and made a thing on Facebook. Well, as most people know, if you hit a deer back, you don't want to go in there chasing him. You know? Mm-hmm. Well, the guy, come to find out, the guy did everything right? So I was like, okay, well, you know, I work for a living, so you give me till this evening, I get off at 4:30, 5 o'clock. By the time I get to you, it'd be 6:30. I'd get the deer, you know, 8-9 hours to lay down and, you know, hopefully expire. I said, if not, you know, he might still be alive, but hopefully expire. And it was like, sounds good, man. And I said, look, I don't know if you're looking for a professional. There's plenty of guys tagging other people on this post. If you're looking for a professional, you know, go for it. You know, I ain't trying to mess with nobody's stuff. I'm just saying I have a dog that I feel like can get this done.
Yes, sir.
and might have been the wrong thing to do, might have been the right thing to do. I don't, you know. But anyways, we went out there, and sure enough, we went like 730-something, 740-something like that, and found three wound beds, and then found the deer dead.
Wow.
It was awesome. I mean, straight there took us, you know, not very long. You know, a lot shorter than what it would take, you know, somebody else out there searching. I mean, there was areas with no blood. There was areas with good blood. There was a couple wound beds where the deer did a couple circles out of there. And, you know, honestly, I was looking myself without the dog. I would have never known which way he went out of there.
Mm-hmm.
But because it was messed with, you know, no one walked on it, no one did anything, it was fairly easy for the dog to track him. After that, then I found that deer, and I was like, man, I have something here. You know, that was pretty impressive. But at the time, I thought it was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
You know, but I've seen some crazy now, you know, doing it for the public for 7.5, almost 8 years now. Like I said, I've seen some wild stuff. And that one will stick with me for a while just because that was my first one for the public. And I realized, like, and then, you know, I might have ruffled some feathers with a few guys that normally would track in that area. But, you know, now after sitting and talking to those guys and doing this for a long time, they've kind of accepted me into their, well, I feel like they've accepted me into their little,
yes,
you know, group of people, kind of made halfway a name through the years for myself. And you know, generally, if those guys get a call and they're like, hey, it's over here, they're like, hey, this guy's close here, and then they refer me, which is always good to know, to get referred by somebody who's been doing it for 20 years that, hey, this guy can get it done for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I, like you were saying, talking about a market for it, I didn't even know it was really a thing until I met you, and I didn't know you very well, and, you know, I've never even had you track a deer for me, but I've hunted with you and things, and I know your reputation and know you as an outdoorsman, and, I mean, I can guarantee that your dogs are game as they come. And that's just knowing you as a person and knowing the reputation you stand behind, and, I mean, you go on any Facebook post, you know, on any of these pages around here and somebody is looking for a dog, there's 10 to 1 people naming you. In our area.
I appreciate that.
It's
definitely cool to see on my end, you know. I try not to get too involved in that stuff. Like, I'll see my name on there. I'll just be like, hey, thanks. Throw my number out there. I try to not get too involved in it. Just, I don't. Kind of, you know, like you said, I don't do much advertising.
Yeah.
I might do a post here and there of like, oh, hey, found this. If y'all need help, call me. But for the most part, you know, I try to, got to the point when I first started, I took pictures of everything. I've kind of gotten to a point now where I only take pictures of a few.
Yeah.
I get wrapped up in it. You know, I enjoy going, you show up there, people's heads are hanging. They're like, dang, man, I can't find this thing. And some of them, you know, it's kids first year. Some of them it's, you know, it may be the biggest year of this guy's life. It may be just another buck, you know, like nothing special to them, but they, you know, as an outdoorsman, a sportsman, you don't want to just leave it lay, you know, you want to put in every means necessary.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you show up, everybody's head's hanging, you know, you feel like the hero when you get there, and you know, you drop the dogs out, and they find that sign, and they take off, and, you know, you're talking to the hunter, man, where'd that deer go? You know, from here, could you see him go from here? Man, your dogs went right where he went into the woods. I'm like, okay, well, that's positive, right? They didn't run around stupid. So it's always good to set those kinds of things. And then you get there and you find it, and they're like, man, we walked right through there. And I'm like, oh.
Yep.
You know, you either walked by him or he wasn't there when you walked by. I mean, you never know.
Yep. I've had times where I've been looking for a deer and, you know, you get that buck fever or whatever it may be, you get that adrenaline running through you, and you think the deer ran through this one spot, and you're completely off by like 20, 30 yards, and you're going down the wrong trail. I've had that happen to me personally a couple times, where I think I know where the deer went, and the deer went complete opposite, especially while bow hunting.
Oh yeah, like there's half the calls you go to that I go to anyways. You know, you get a call. Oh man, he ran off this direction. Okay, cool. And then the dogs take off. And it's like, man, the deer went that way, and I'm like, well, let's just see what happens. Yeah. You know. And then they go in there, and it's like, my favorite is when you get there, and they're like, man, I know I shot this deer good, but I can't find any blood. He went this way. I've been walking this way for the last 4 hours. Can't see anything. You show up after that. The dogs get there. They, you know, the guy thinks the deer went right. You get there, and the dogs hook the left and go in there 65 yards and stop. And you're like, all right, well, hey, let's walk over here. They're like, why are we walking over there? The deer went this way. I'm like, well, let's just walk over here and see what happened. We walking up there, and bam, there the deer is laying there dead. You know, perfect shot. You know, there was blood, just they didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had one. This guy shot this deer with a seven mag. I mean, plenty of guns.
Yeah.
For a deer around here. And they're like, we know he ran this way. You know, he ran into a field that's chest high Johnson grass. They walked around in there for an hour and a half, 2 hours, called me. They said, look, there's no blood. He's standing on like a white gravel road. There should have been blood, but there was no blood. They're like, we know, you know, I don't remember how old the kid was, 15, 14, somewhere around that. He said, look, I know my kid's a good shot. He shot plenty of deer. He's a good shot. He tells me he shot his belly kidding. Okay. Then we go, drop dogs out on the road where they said they went. They ran to the truck, and they were, I think it was like 52 yards from the truck. Showed them stop, and I was like, oh, let's walk over here. We walked over there, and sure enough, there that deer was laying in the chest by Johnson Grove. And they're like, dude, we walked within 3 foot of this thing. And I'm like, they were like, literally, you can see the trails in the Johnson grass where they were weaving through there.
Mm.
You know how it is when you walk through that tall grass, kind of lay it down. And
yeah.
You step on. But you could see the trails where they walked within 3 feet of and just didn't see it.
Yeah, I've had a deer that I've shot whenever I was younger growing up. I learned how to shoot a 222, and that was my first deer rifle. So you really have to make a good shot with that rifle. It's like, I don't know, it's like a 50 or 60 grain bullet. But most of the time when I would shoot them, you'd have some that drop, but then there'd be occasionally one or two that would run. You shoot them right behind the shoulder, it would go through that entry, you know, that initial entry, but it wouldn't come out.
Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't have a blood trail. And I don't know, it happened probably 2 times that I had deer like that, and I just had to walk trying to follow tracks. I couldn't follow blood, and I would have to sit there and just be calm and smell, and I would have to literally try to smell where the deer would be.
Oh, that's, yeah, crazy. And especially if you shoot one during the rut, you get close enough to it. I mean, as a deer hunter, I'm sure everybody knows that smell. You know, you get close to him, you're like, man, there he is somewhere right here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can smell him. And I know, so the one time I've almost had to call you, it wasn't a deer I shot, it was a deer my sister shot. And she made a good shot, but I think she was shooting a 243, and he was kind of quartered away, so it came out like front of his chest. Like, he was quartered pretty hard. And I know, I remember texting you, because it was a big deer. I text you saying, hey, I may need a dog, because we had followed blood for like 150 yards, but it was like real just spotty blood, like little drops. And he was headed to the creek. And, you know, I knew once he hit that creek, we were going to be kind of screwed. So once he started going downhill, dude, it was like somebody had cut the top off a gallon of milk and was just throwing blood everywhere. I guess just the angle of the shot, you know, it exited kind of high. So that blood was pulling up inside of his chest cavity. And then when he started going downhill, it just started pouring out.
Oh, yeah.
And we found him pretty easy then. So I was like, yeah, we found him. But, that being said, I know we're talking about people, you know, making a shot and then reaching out to you to come and track after they've looked around. But so what is kind of like the ideal situation for you as far as someone reaching out after a shot needing help with dogs? Like, what are you wanting the customer or the client to tell you? And then what are you wanting their actions to be? Just so people kind of know, like, hey, if you do make a shot and are needing somebody with a dog, you know, these are the actions you should take to make it more successful for the dogs.
Man, the best thing to do, which I understand, you know, everybody knows that you're going to pay for a well-trained dog,
yeah.
Right? You got to, it sucks, but out there nowadays, there's 100 guys with dogs that, you know, oh no, you know, this guy's duck dog at camp found a deer one time, so you can come try it, you know, like, don't do that, you know, the way I ask is like, you know, if you have a video of the shot, you know, with nowadays, everybody, some people are videoing, some people ain't, if you have a video, send it, that'll help. Then if you, you know, especially with archery equipment, you know, if you got a full pass through, send me a picture of the arrow,
yeah.
The whole arrow, the front of it, the fletching, all of it. From seeing, you know, I track more deer than in a year than what most people have tracked in their life, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But we get called, depending on the year, you know, during COVID, I was bland, you know, 2020, bland, full. I mean, because no one was working, right? So everybody was hunting. And paid to go hunt. But best thing is, you know, videos if you got it, pictures of, you know, the blood you did find, your arrow. And then the best thing to do, man, is honestly, like, if you start following a blood trail and you start getting doubts in your mind, like, man, maybe my shot wasn't good. Maybe this, maybe, you know, any kind of doubt where you start thinking I should probably stop and call a dog, follow your gut this time. You know, you get the guides, like I said earlier, I mean, obviously, you know, you're paying for a quality, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot of guys will look at it and think, man, I got paid, somebody comes, this and that, but then they start walking for 4 hours, you know, doing zigzag, walking, you know, but, you know, like most people, you shoot a deer and you start off with a good blood trail. You're not most thinking, oh, let me stay off this for the just in case. You know, they're going to walk right now, man. Now you stepped in however much scent, and then the blood trail quits on you. Now you walk around in circles and zigzags, walking 600 yards, 400 yards, and zigzags.
Mm-hmm.
And you're taking that scent that I'm trying to follow and trailing it everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, it makes it hard on the dogs. It makes it hard on everything, which, you know, it's something we have to deal with sometimes. And sometimes, depending on the walking around, you know, I'll be honest with you, I'm just like, hey, look, man, you walk around for all dang day, you know, I don't feel comfortable coming and looking like an idiot.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Because the dogs, they don't know. You know, they're just following their nose.
Yeah. Yeah, their nose doesn't lie to them.
Yeah. So if they've got scent going one way, like, example, I went to a track last year. Guy shot the deer. He had good blood right next to where he shot the deer. He only had good blood for, like, 20 of them. He walked right down it, got to the end of it, walked a couple little circles, not very far, which, you know, is good, right? You can look a little bit. You know, I understand there's times that, like, blood trail skips a little bit. Look up a little bit, but don't go crazy far, right?
Yes, sir.
Then he went back to the area where he shot the deer, and then he was like, man, maybe the deer turned and went down this obvious trail, you know, right? So he turned and he walked down that trail, and he went like 150 yards down that trail, and then he came back. He's like, I have no clue. So he pulled, which ain't bad, right? We can work past something easy, you know, not very far like that. That'd be easy. Well, where the blood trail ended is where that obvious trail was, and we dropped the dogs at the start of it. No one didn't go very far. When the dogs hit that obvious trail, they turned left down that obvious trail and went 150, 160 yards, and they just did a bunch of loops, circles, trying to pick it back up.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, something ain't right. We walked over there to them. Was like, okay, let's go back. So we went back to where the trail split off, and I started over there. Well, then they went kind of straightish, but to the right. And they went up there like 160-ish, I don't know, maybe a little farther, maybe a little shorter. I don't remember exactly. And went up there and found the deer. And it just goes to show, like, hey, this guy kind of walked a little bit, but he stepped in something. And it wasn't obvious. Like, going down that trail, you couldn't see any blood, couldn't see anything down there. It was just, they followed their nose. It was just kind of, that as an example to show, like, hey, they don't know everything. But if you take a trail and you walk around and send it one way, they're going to go that way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the best thing is, like, if somebody calls and you did walk around deep, I ask people, be honest with me, because if you're not honest with me, I'm going to find out.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like the Maury show, like, but with dogs and deer.
The more you walk around, the harder it is. I wish I would have screenshot or saved this post I seen on Facebook, and it was on a tracking page, and it was like, you know, a deer that they didn't pursue knew they made a bad shot, dog tracking it. And it showed, like, the deer's path, and it showed the dog's path, you know, the little dots. And then they showed, all right, deer's path, and then your path walking, going around, and it had just dots scattered all through the woods, right? They were just grid searching, doing circles. And I was like, you know what? This is a perfect representation of what it is. Great. And I should have saved it, but I didn't. And, like, it just makes it hard. So, like I said, the best thing I asked for is a video, honesty. And then, like I said, I mean, explain everything. And then when you shoot, you know, like Christian said earlier, you know, your adrenaline gets to you. You thought the deer went right, but it went left. You know, best thing to do is watch the deer. You know, what was his reaction when he ran off? Did he run out of there? Was he favoring a leg when he ran off? Was he all hunched up? Was he head down? Did he walk off? Did he trot? You know, just little stuff like that is all clues. And I didn't learn this overnight by no means. It's just, you know, you get so many calls, and then you go, you track the deer, you heard their story, you see the end result. Like, okay, this deer was hit here, and this is kind of what this guy told me. And then the next call, you know, you get it says this, and then eventually you end up hearing the same story twice. Like, hey man, when this deer got shot, he did this. You're like, okay, I got a pretty good idea how this deer was hit, you know, just by connecting the dots of, you know, different stories and then experiences.
Have you
honestly, when people call, man, it's a halfway interrogation, man. I'm asking, what time did you shoot? Were you elevated? Were you on the ground? Were you, you know, crossbow, combo? What kind of broadhead were you shooting? Or, you know, if archery, if you're a rifle, like, okay, rifle, how far was the shot? You know, how little things that you would think not matter, like, were you just shooting off the window of the deer stand, or were you set up, you know, had a tripod, something solid to rest on? What did deer do? How far could you see the deer run? All kinds of questions.
Have you ever been on a trail of anything other than a whitetail?
Yeah, we checked a handful of axes, a couple of black bucks, wildebeest, oryx, gimp buck.
Oh, really?
An elk. The elk was the wildest one, honestly.
Really?
That, you know, you'd think a 700-pound animal laying in the woods would be pretty easy to spot, but I'll tell you, I'll tell you if you guys can hear it, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously in our area, there's a bunch of high fence ranches and, you know, clients coming in and spending money on animals. That's a big misconception. I mean, don't get me wrong, there are places where it's like going into a zoo, pick one and shoot one, but there are also a lot of places that you go in, and just because it's high fence doesn't mean you're going to shoot something.
Yes, sir.
And anyways, they shot this elk with, I want to say, I don't know, something big, 300 wind meg, something fully capable of thinking about elk. And then they shot him. They had like two little drops of blood where he ran into the woods. He couldn't see him run very far. He had about 10 yards to go before he hit the tree. And it's over there in like the land past this area. See, nobody's familiar with that area. It's rocks and cedar. That's about it.
Yes, sir.
And they ran into the cedar thicket, and they had two drops of blood going into the cedar thicket. And then about 10 yards up, they had two more drops of blood, but he was on this pretty solid trail. And the trail turned, and as the trail turned, there was two more drops of blood there. So they're like, okay, he must have turned. They walked around in that cedar thicket for a little over an hour. They called me and said, hey, man, can you come track and help? I was like, yeah, what do you got? This is probably 300 wind mag. I don't remember the yardage. Probably wasn't very far, 100 yards or so. Well, I mean, if you hit him good, that's plenty of gun, right?
Yeah.
We went in there, and man, it was the wildest thing. My dogs get excited to run, and for whatever reason, this time, if the wind was blowing our way, I don't remember exactly, if they could just wind him laying in there. And I was having a hard time holding on to him at the truck, and, you know, turning their GPS collars on, you know, getting everything kind of ready to go. Anyways, I kicked one of them out of the truck. He ran in there. I was getting the other one ready. That one ran in there. I was like, okay. And no sooner than I let them go, my deal beeps at me, vibrates, shows they're stopped. I was like, okay, looked at it. To be honest, they didn't go very far. They were like 50 yards in there. I was like, okay, that's not very far. I thought maybe, okay, we've been in the truck for 45 minutes. I don't know how long it was. They went to the bathroom, maybe they're pooping or something. And look down again, they're still sitting there. So I sat there talking to the guy, kind of getting the story again. I'm like, okay, you shot him here, stands there, shooting off a pretty solid rest, blah, blah, blah. They're still sitting there. I was like, well, let's walk in here. And sure enough, they're showing me there's blood here. They got it marked, this little toilet paper on the ground. I don't remember exactly. They're like, he went that way, looked down, the dogs from that corner, I think were like 20 yards from that corner where the trail turned. And so I ducked down. I know, Richard, you've been in the cedar thicket.
Oh, yeah.
Christian.
Oh, yeah,
I've,
for sure.
I've talked to you before, but I don't think I've ever actually met you. Maybe I have. I don't think. But I ducked down, you know, the cedar thicket, you see it real low to the ground, you can see a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I shine the light up, and I can see the butt end of this elk, and I can see the dog. I just started laughing. They were like, what? I said, there he is. They said, what are you talking about? We walked up there the 20 yards, 25 yards, something like that. And this thing's laying there. I mean, dead as a doornail. They're like, how in the heck did we not see this? I'm like, man, it's hard to miss a 700-pound animal with, you know, 300 inches of horn on its head. Laying here.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy he even got up in there, though. I mean, them thick cedars like that, that's...
Hey, I'll be honest with you, man. He had his leg in the middle of this cedar. We had to get a chainsaw in there to cut... We couldn't get his leg out of it. We had to get a chainsaw and cut the limbs off the cedar tree to get a leg on it.
Daggum.
And he just ran in there, and I guess whenever took his final steps, nosedived into it.
Damn. So... Now that we kind of heard a little bit about the, you know, kind of what your ideal situations are for tracking and, you know, some of the factors that can play when clients are trying to recover on their own and kind of get into a sticky situation, let's hear, if you don't mind sharing some of your more memorable experiences on recoveries, or if you've got some wild stories you want to share, I'd love to hear them.
Kind of go back real quick on the perfect scenario. Perfect scenario is just shoot when they call me. Wait, don't even look at all. That's perfect scenario, which, I mean, you know, 9 times out of 10 that ain't gonna happen.
Yeah.
But moving forward to memorable, man, I got a couple. I'd say one of my favorite ones, man, was I had his dad call me, and it was his son shot a deer. It was his first deer with a bow. I want to say, I don't remember, he was pretty young, probably 11, 12. And let me start off by saying this was no way near the biggest deer I've ever found. It was just a little spike, nothing special. And the dad was just trying to teach the kid, hey, we got this animal. and we have blood on the ground. We need to do everything we can to recover it. They look, couldn't find it, called me. I said, look, man, you guys ain't far. Son's first year. I'm gonna come look you up. You know, trailed it, found blood, got up to their, you know, we started where it was hit because they didn't have blood very far, and then we moved. He said he had blood, you know, 50, 60 yards, but we hit like 100 yards and was still randomly finding blood. He was like, man, we ain't been this far yet. He was like, last blood we had was a long ways ago, like by that tree. I was like, dude, that was only like 30 yards in. He said, oh, well, I guess I thought I was farther. I said, well, I can see where distance is a little confusing. It was kind of thick where the deer went.
Yeah.
And then we trailed this deer. The deer did make it a pretty good ways, 200 and something, almost 100 yards. And we found him with a kid. And then when the dogs went, got there, and I said, all right, let's walk up here. We got up. Deer. Dang it, man. This sucks, you know. Then we found him. This kid. I got a picture somewhere. I can send it to y'all if you guys want it.
Yeah.
This kid, I took a picture of him with the deer, and this kid smiled. It says it all, you know. It wasn't a big deer by no means. It wasn't anything special. It was just a spike of his first deer. Mm-hmm. And, man, just the way he lit up whenever we come walking up there, you could see dog's tails wagging, shine the flashlight, see the deer. He went running up there, and I was like, hey, hold on a second, you know. my dogs ain't going to bite anybody. They're not mean. But over a dead animal, you know, they're doing their job. I just.
Yeah, something could happen.
Something could happen, right? Like, it shouldn't, and it won't happen. I promise you that.
Just precaution.
Just in case, you know, if the dog is chewing on it, doesn't see him come up and grab it, you know, the dog's like, hey, this is my deer. What are you doing? Once I get there, the dogs know, hey, okay, we did our job, and you know, whatever. We take pictures, pet them, love them, touch the deer, drag the deer around, whatever you want to do. They're the most docile dogs I've ever seen. You know, I got kids, I got family, I can't have dogs that are going to be mean.
Yeah.
You know, I know they're not going to bite anybody, but just precaution, I tell everybody, hey, let me be the first one there, just to, you know.
Yeah, get the dogs.
They don't
off
know. The dogs don't know them. They're strangers, you know. As a precaution. I mean, no matter.
Yeah, I think.
But anyway, that's probably one of my more favorite ones is those kinds of situations, you know. And I got some others that are just big deer, you know. I enjoy finding the two ones that's always cool, like low fence giants you never hear of, you know, 180 plus deer that are around our area. Deer just don't get that big.
Yes, sir.
On low fence, when you drive 20 minutes down the road and find a 180 cent monster, this is awesome. And then I don't remember what else said exciting. Man, I think the exciting ones is when you can get in there and it's a foot race, you know, a foot race of will. You know that deer's injured. He's hurt bad. Get in there, and the dogs run down. They get him stopped. And you get there, you know that deer's hurt and bad. And I enjoy the, oh, hey, we got to go. Let's go, you know. And we're going in there. And it's fun at that point to me because sometimes, yeah, you can walk right in there to them, and they, you know, they're hurt bad enough they don't care. Other times they're hurt bad enough, but still got some sense to them. And they're, you know, you got to be quiet. You know, it's like you're stalking in, you know. You got to sneak in there. You know, you're making sure the wind's right. So when you're coming up there, the wind ain't going right to the deer. Now that deer not only has pressure from the dogs, but now he can smell you coming, and they know for sure you're going to, you know, get away from it. You know, we've all been busted, get winded.
Oh, yeah.
It's the same thing thinking of, you know, if you got to be. Sometimes you got to play it smart and go in there, you know, with some thin. Then other than that, I mean, hard to decipher. Probably the kid ones are my favorite.
Yes, sir.
I enjoy those, you know. Like, we had one in Gatesville, actually, that was a kid one, you know. The deer was shot, crazy angle. I know the guy called me, hey, man, daughter shot this deer with a crossbow. What can we do? I'm like, well, I'll see you this evening. The video you sent me shows that deer's hit like this. You know, let's back off, give him a little bit of time. You're not on a very big piece of property. It's enough property for him to stay on, but not enough to where if we get in there and start running him, he's going to stay on it. You may get over. And we're not having permission and not knowing the neighbors. Our best bet is to give him some more time and then go in there. You know, go in there, you go 700 yards down. And it was a track. I don't know exactly where you live at, but if you know Gatesville at all, I know there's that barbecue place there in town and all that land back in there. You got the big creek and river, deer camp. There's only so many places deer can cross it. We stayed on one side of that the whole way down it.
Yeah.
700 something yards, and then back in there behind them houses is a coyote's dream. We got in there, we found the deer, luckily before the coyotes. And man, this is a weird one, right? I've never had the dogs do it. But get in there and they sit there for a few minutes. Then they take off the deer. The dogs take off running 30, 40 yards in a direction. I'm like looking at my GPS. You know, I can't see them. I can just see my GPS where they're at. And they go and run for 30, 40 yards and then come back to a spot. I'm like, what the heck are they doing? You know? And then they sit there for a few minutes. They take off again 30, 40 yards in the next direction and then come back. And it was just weird how they were doing. I was like, man, what the heck? What are these dogs doing? Finally, we go walking in. We're probably 80 yards from where the dogs are doing all this. And about that time, you know, it's dark. We're walking through their flashlights. About that time, we see this coyote. Mm. We're like, huh. And we're like I said, at this point, we're like 80 yards or so from the dogs. We see this coyote. We're like, what are you doing, right? He runs off the opposite way, you know, runs off. Well, then now the dogs are staying still. Like, okay, well, let's go up here. We get up there. There's the deer. He, you know, coyotes ain't touched one bit. I'm like, okay, well. Well, then thinking about it, and I don't know for sure, right, because I didn't see it. But what I think happened is they got there, the dogs, and it was probably about the same time as the coyotes. This was only, you know, 30 minutes or so after dark. I'm not saying the coyotes only moving in the dark, but just coincidentally found the deer, and either the coyotes just got there or was getting there shortly after the dogs. But what I think was happening is that coyote was coming in and trying to join them, and the dogs were like, my dogs were like, heck no, you know, this is ours.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Running him off and then coming back, and then that coyote was coming back and forth, and then finally we got close to scooping the coyote off. But.
Yeah, kind of like when you watch, if you know, those that call that know what decoy dogging is, kind of like that maybe.
Yeah, maybe. You know how the dogs chase and they run off, and then the dog comes and they, you mm-hmm. know, lure that coyote closer. I think that's what happened, but I'm just assuming, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly, but.
That's pretty crazy.
That was definitely an interesting one, and it's weird. You know, you're looking. The only thing I can see is the GPS. You know, I see their trail. I'm like, okay, they're on a pretty good line here. Let's see what happens. And, okay, hey, they stopped, or hey, they're moving fast now. They must have got him up and running. And then they stop and they're barking. I'm like, okay, they're barking. Then he's alive. You know,
that's pretty wild.
It's
wild. So, kind of. Maybe we'll wrap it up on this part, but so like you said earlier, you probably track more deer in one season than most people track in their life.
So, I mean, think about it. I mean, if you live in the right part of the state, you can shoot 5 deer.
Yeah.
And most people don't have multiple places where they're hunting this county, that county, that county, where they're, you know, shooting a buck here, shooting a buck there, shooting a buck here, shooting a buck there. You know, you get 5 deer a year regardless, right? So yeah. You're tracking 5 deer. there's not many people out there that are shooting five deer a year.
Yeah,
you know, they're going to shoot their buck, maybe a doe, and they're gonna move, you know what I mean, and then wait till the next year, they're going to shoot a couple more.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know what I mean? So, say on average, everybody shoots three deer a year.
Yeah, you're tracking that in a week.
Yeah, I'm tracking. Yeah, this week, I've tracked four deer this week. So
where I was going with that is, when you see certain shots, like, you know, you can look at a shot and say, okay, that hit here, here, and here. This is more than likely what the deer is going to do. Do you want to kind of give a rundown on kind of what people should expect when, like, let's say they shoot one a little forward or a little back, or, you know, kind of based off placement, what blood looks like? I know it varies each situation, but.
Yeah, it varies. I mean, you want to look at the blood, you know, time is your friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you shoot one good with your bow, and say you're hunting on the edge of a field, and for whatever reason you shoot that deer and he runs out there in the middle of the hill and falls over 40 yards away, you know, do you have to sit there for 45 minutes? You know, no, probably not. I mean, I would give him a minute or two just to kind of watch and see what happens, you know, but then after, you know, 20 minutes, get out, go down there, you know, check it out. But if you don't see the deer fall, you know, or something, time's your friend. I mean, I know it's hot down here in bow season, and I know if you want to get the guts out in time of manner because it is hot, but it doesn't have to be right away.
Yes, sir.
You know, time's your friend. If the deer's dead in 5 minutes, he's going to be dead in 30.
Yeah.
But if you go looking in 5 minutes, but that deer needed 20 minutes to die, he ain't going to be dead in the 5 minutes you gave him to go look.
Yeah. I know when you're bow hunting, typically you look at your arrow, you look at your fletchings, and kind of see what blood you have there if you have a pass-through. And that'll kind of give you a determining factor of how long to wait. Because I know, you know, you get a hard shot, typically you can wait, I always would say, like 30 minutes, you know, until you go track it.
Yeah, I mean,
you shoot one in the stomach, though.
If I shoot a deer, I'm sitting there.
Yeah.
I'm going to sit for 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Give him some time. Give him a few minutes, you know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, whatever it may be. I'm going to give him some time just to have a chance. You know, I don't want to go pushing and, mm-hmm. and jumping. I mean, that's your worst thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say if you're sitting there and you shoot, you know, you've got to evaluate everything. Were you nervous? Were you excited? Are you 100% sure you hit him where you think you hit him? There's so many factors, man. It's situational that, you know, so many things can happen. Heck, I've shot deer that I was like, man, that was a terrible shot. And give them some time. And then you go look and you're like, dang, that deer made it 50 yards. There's no way he should have only made it 50 yards. Heck, there's deer that I've tracked with the dogs that they're like, man, I hit this deer back. I'll be honest with you, I ain't looked at all. I figured my best bet, you know, especially if you shoot, you know, like earlier before we started, Christian, you said you got a deer you've been watching since July.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've been watching him forever, and you hit him a little back, you're going to be like, dang, man.
Right.
I need to give him some time. The best thing to do is give him that time.
Yeah.
You know, dang, I wasn't 100% confident in that. You know, instead of giving him 30 minutes, maybe sit there for an hour. And a lot of times, sometimes them deer that are hit bad, they're going to move just, especially if they don't know you're there. They're going to move just a little bit. I mean, I've seen deer that are shot bad, and they run 40 yards, and they just stand there like, oh, man, what the heck was that?
Mm-hmm.
And if you get out of the stand after 5 minutes of sitting there, you go walk, check your arrow. About the time you hear something crashing through the woods, you're like, oh, no.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that wasn't what I anticipated happening here, you know?
Yeah.
So my thing is just, say time would be the thing, and then after that would be just knowing, you know, having the confidence and this is what I did, you know, paying it like we said earlier, you know, paying attention to, oh, hey, you know, this was a little thing.
Yes, sir. Cool, cool. So you're headed to track one right now, yeah?
Yeah, I'm actually just pulled up at the gate in front of here, trying to. Well, I think I'm at the gate. I turned where it says the send drop is, and seen somebody flash a flashlight at me, so I think I'm at the right spot.
Well, that's good timing, I guess, man. We appreciate you being here. You know, some great information, and I know we're going to have you on. There's a lot of stuff we didn't talk about that you do. So we certainly...
Oh, yeah, dude, the predator hunting.
Yeah. Yeah, we...
That's where we need to go.
We'll definitely do that, but we dang sure appreciate you being on here today. Good luck with this deer. Hopefully you get it found or, you know, get the guy some closure on it anyway.
Yeah, this one's going to be a tricky one.
Well, maybe once it's done, we can get a recap from you and add that in here or something, give kind of a recap as to what happened.
Oh, yeah.
All right, man. I appreciate it. Good luck.
Yes, sir. Y'all have a good night.
Yes, sir. You too, buddy. Bye.
All right, so y'all just heard from Dylan Mormon. He runs, obviously, the Tracking Dogs, as we just discussed. But if you're watching this on YouTube, make sure you like, comment, subscribe. Also, make sure you follow us on all our pages at Native Waves Podcast. Like I said, once again, October 15th on Texas Cash Magazine. You could see us featured in there. Once again, another shout out to Dancing Dogs Ranch for the apparel and the support that we've been getting from you. So we really do appreciate that. Other than that, hope y'all enjoy. Just keep living your hobbies.
We'll see y'all later.